You are listening to The Dirt Logistician, the podcast designed to provide training tips and engage in meaningful discussion to help you and your organization get better at tactical sustainment. Brought to you by the Gold Miner team at Fort Irwin. Train the force. The views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the official position of the National Training Center, the Department of the Army, or the U.S. government.
Welcome to the Dirt Logistician Podcast. I am Gold Miner 05, Major Sarah Barron, and today I am joined by Major Griffin Hill and Sergeant First Class Richard Raymond, the SPO team from 3rd Brigade, 1st Armored Division. We just finished their rotation here, and it went very well. So today we're going to talk about the interactions of the SPO OIC and NCOIC and how that played into their success here at the NTC. So, gentlemen, if you'd like to give a brief background and the amount of time you've been in your position so far.
I've been in the Army for going on 19 years. I've been in 92 Fox for pretty much all of it. I've served in multiple logistical positions, everything from a squad leader down to the now the SPO NCOIC. That's about it.
I'm Major Griffin Hill. I spent my lieutenant time in 25th ID. And then I commanded Delta FSC and 1-1 Cav before going to CGSC. And now I'm at 1st Armored Division as the SPO for Bulldog. I've been in the seat for about 9 months. I've got one combat deployment to Afghanistan, and I think this is my third rotation here at the National Training Center.
Okay. So we'll start by talking about how you split up your roles and responsibilities in Garrison, how you manage your daily operations, and then how you were able to translate that into how you manage things here at NTC.
So I think one of the keys to our success that I would pass on is we tailored how we operated in Garrison with the way that we saw ourselves fighting out here. Specifically, the way Sergeant Raymond and I really split up the way our duties and responsibilities within the shop, I really leaned hard on Sergeant Raymond to really manage the coup ops fight is a good way to describe it, so that I could focus on more of the long range and then the outside integration with other organizations like the DSSB. And we through the train up to the National Training Center, we started doing that really from the get-go. And that includes everything from our sustainment battle rhythm to interfacing with the FSCs and being able to battle track what they were doing to support their formations, even through the smaller tasks like individual training and table six crew qual. That allowed us to kind of to set conditions for how we were going to operate when we got here to the box.
I also think it was the understanding that him and I had, like, a plethora of knowledge in different aspects of class of supply. So I remember prior to going to gunnery, we established this, like you said, man, roles and responsibilities, but it was tailored to our strengths. You know, he sat there and said, hey, I'm going to manage this, right? And then you're going to manage this and this. If you take that into concept, right, there's only one area that we can't really like manage would be medical, right? But we were able to effectively control all the other classes supply because it tailored to our strengths. So I think that's what led us to be a successful organization at the National Training Center, ma'am.
Okay. And you had some holes in your shop. How were you able to manage that between the two of you? Like you were saying, with the balancing what knowledge you had and then cross-training others within your shop.
Yeah. So I don't think that we're the only ones with this problem, but I mean, we even in Garrison, we're really only manned about 60-70% of what the IMTO is. And then when we came out here, there's some other NTC-isms that my S&S NCO being postured back in the cantonment area with the fuel farm. So we went out to, we did a lot of talent management is really what it boils down to. And I think it worked out well with, we put the right people at the right places of friction and then gave them the latitude to act on the brigade's behalf. with, you know, with standard marching orders, but and you know, still maintaining active communication. So I left my deputy back at the 916th. I assumed some risk in the box with not having my deputy out there to help me manage operations. I leaned heavily on Sergeant Raymond to do that. And I left him with the 916th to be our LNO. I would say that the lesson out of that is if the LNO at 916th doesn't hurt you to lose them in the box, then they're not the right person to be there. I did the same thing with my S and SNCO. You know, Sergeant Raymond's a 92 Fox. He knows how to manage fuel, among other things. I would agree with the statement that he made. His knowledge base is well beyond his MOS. So I felt comfortable with leaving my fuel NCO back in the rear to help manage the brigade's fuel and ensure that the CSSB got what they needed in order to be able to push that to us. Because it didn't matter if we were managing it out in the box. If it wasn't getting out to the box, then it didn't matter. And so what that left me with is two lieutenants, one of whom was my SPOTRANS, who's a transporter, and then my medical lieutenant, who I had to cross train to be a battle captain during the day to maintain our LCOP. We lost our mortuary affairs NCO shortly before coming out here. So Cipriano, as the medical officer that we had in the section, was also cross trained on mortuary affairs to help manage that. And then my SPO trans, we had his schedule offset in the box, so that he was coming in late afternoon. He and Cipriano would do a few hours of battle handover, where they were working hand in hand to manage the LCOP and those battle captain like responsibilities. And then Cipriano would break contact to get a couple hours of sleep, and then Jory would carry the torch through the night. The other TTPs that we put in place, simple stuff like where did I sleep? Where did Sergeant Raymond sleep? What was the wake up criteria? So Jory had wake up criteria. He managed the incoming messages through the JBCP and the phone calls through the night. And if he reached a wall, or there was something that came up that he couldn't figure out himself, he knew exactly where we were, and had that criteria to wake us up so that we could engage it. And that allowed us to do the fighter management piece, and build a sustainable model, that allowed the shop to keep going, without burning out in the first 96 hours of the fight.
I think, from my NCO side of the house, ma'am, and standpoint, there was a lot of implied tasks that didn't have to be mentioned. We were, at least for me, I was very comfortable for them to write checks for me that I was willing to cash because of that implied task that they had. It was not a micromanagement kind of SPO section. And you, ma'am, as a previous SPO, you understand that you have to have critical thinkers, forward thinkers, think outside the box, get over that 3-foot wall. And even though we are short staffed, we are able to have those conversations and not have those conversations at the same time, because they knew what our intent was. Even though we didn't have to explain it to them, they knew that there was an implied task. And I think that's what made it very successful for us with a short staff section. But that's my take on it.
You know, I think to add to that, it's very easy as the OIC of the SPO section to really suck everything to the OIC and really hold it at the major's level and try and do everything. That's because you have control if you're doing that. What I think the effect that has on the shop, and then the ripple effect that has across the sustainment enterprise, is one, it's not a sustainable model. You have to put the right people in the right places, and you have to have that level of trust with the right guidance to make decisions. If the section is looking to the OIC, or they're looking to the NCOIC for every decision that they need to make, it's always going to be late. Sergeant Raymond and I tried very hard to give that guidance and give that latitude and disperse those duties and responsibilities so that we didn't create that issue. And what that allowed me to do as the OIC is interface directly with FSC commanders. It allowed me to interface with the DSB while other things were happening. Other coordination was being made. Battle tracking was happening. LCOPs were being updated. Instead of trying to hold everything in one central location, things are just moving too fast. Things are changing too fast to keep up with that.
Yeah, I definitely noticed that your shop functioned very well, whether you guys were in it or not, which is the mark of an extremely efficient SPO shop. Looking past just how your shop interacted, how did you split your responsibilities as you were working with the FSCs, both in an informal mentorship and also as you were managing the brigade sustainment fight?
So I think for me, ma'am, it was the years of experience I have. And as an NCO, I can only recommend to officers, right? I can't dictate how they run, especially commanders, how they run their companies. And I think it's based off the rapport you have with said FSC commanders. I've been in the SPO section for going on 3 years now. And I've seen some come in. I've seen some come go, right? It's just they all start in the SPO section or the 3 section until they find a home. That's how it usually goes in a BSB. But you build that rapport with them there. And then as they take that command, pre-command or post-command, whatever, you know, they start taking your advice. And I think with what I would make a successful recommendation is you have to start with the rapport. Again, we are not in a tasking organization. None of us can. But we can always recommend and give advice from historical knowledge that either A, we've been through, B, we've seen done, or C, that we're willing to try. So I think with a recommendation and that rapport, that builds that relationship with those FSC commanders where it may not be Major Hill. He may be doing something for the boss or the big boss. It's just Sergeant First Class Raymond, and Sergeant First Class Raymond will give you his opinion on how to handle a certain situation within the constraints of your left and right limits, obviously, right? I just know that that's what made us successful. It's not the fact that we were always on them. It's we see the fight 150 meters, 250 meters down the road when they see what's the 25 meter Fast Freddy target. So with that being said, I think that's what made us a successful team with the FSC commanders, that they took our candid conversations with them and our recommendations, and some applied it, some didn't apply it, but that's how command goes. You take it with the good and the bad.
I interfaced mostly with the FSC commanders. I did a lot of point to point with them. You know, the log sync was a forum where everybody was together. We invited and encouraged the non-commissioned officers at the FTCPs to also be, whether that was the first sergeant or one of the senior NCOs, to also participate in those log syncs. Sometimes there was always a representative from the FSC that was there. 90% of the time it was the FSC commander. So I interfaced a lot with them. But I think the other piece that Sergeant Raymond is leaving out is his interaction with the first sergeants, and also the distro platoon sergeants as well. So in terms of how we interfaced with the FSC command teams, I think we divvied that up so that we were hitting both the enlisted and the officer side of the house. The FSC commanders by and large did a really, really good job of managing commodities. But we were able to by interfacing with both the first sergeants and the distro platoon sergeants, as well as the FSC commanders, we were able to help them ensure that they were getting the right commodities out on the right log packs on the right time. I think that helped with not sending one FSC out 8 times in one day, which is, again, not a sustainable model.
It was able to complete full circle, ma'am, right? And with completing that full circle, it's not just with, you know, the mid-grade non-commissioned officers, you know, it's the senior non-commissioned officers where the point of friction is. And then he would come behind and high-five me in the WWF ring and hit the commissioned officers, the commanders. And then he, if it took where he'd have to go higher, he would JBCP message or SIPR phone call to his peers. So there was a complete circle that we were always in the same or always in the know when it came to moving of classes, supply, and commodities across the battlefield, ma'am.
And I noticed that you were able to keep a much higher level of fidelity on the commodities, both within the BSB as well as in the FSCs than we usually see. And I think it's due to that interaction that you had at multiple levels within the FSCs.
Before you, I think the framework helped with that. There's a thousand ways to skin the cat with how to set that up for the brigade. But having the FTCPs and highly encouraging the battalions to place their FSC commander at the FTCP as opposed to that commander forward in the CTCP, I think really helped us as a SPO section and as a BSB help manage that commodities because they were physically in the BSA. So even if the log stat that came from the battalion four wasn't entirely accurate and we looked at it and we said, that doesn't look right, we need to inquire and dig deeper into it, we could go directly to that FSC commander and have a face-to-face conversation and get to the root cause of it. Class three bulk is a prime example of that. I think towards the end of our rotation, we did a far better job of accurately reporting our commodities. At the beginning, we had a very difficult time getting accurate fuel numbers, and our backhaul showed that at the beginning, unfortunately. But being able to reach out and physically interact with the commodity manager, not just the reporter, was critical for the brigade.
Okay. Looking towards the planning side of things, as the SPO shop, you are both a brigade planner as well as integrating into battalion plans as well as keeping the current fight going. How did you split both your physical presence and who is doing the mental load of the planning and who is continuing on with the execution?
I'll start and then I'll let you chime in. But I think that's one of the areas that I really held close to me. That moving forward, if I was to say that improve, I'd probably integrate my deputy and my NCOIC a little bit more into the long range planning piece. I did a lot of interfacing with the Brigade Four. He and I were on the same page. I did a lot of interfacing with Colonel Velez, the battalion commander, and the three of us really drove the planning process for the brigade. I didn't so much, and I asked for input, and I included Sergeant Raymond and my deputy into the planning process, but probably not as much as I should have. It probably could have streamlined things a little bit more, if I'm being perfectly honest with where we how we divvied that up.
I don't think it was that bad, sir. I will tell you, and I'm going to use an example when we were jumping the flea, right, and we had this grandeur idea of a fusion flea mixed with a BSA minus, and it worked out flawlessly. But I'm an analog soldier. I have to draw things out, and I charge young non-commissioned officers to be like that because you can truly see it. When we were planning it out, he's like, hey, I have this idea. Let's roll with it. I was like, okay, sir. And as I'm drawing it out, I'm basically drawing a construct of a CTCP with the FTCP with the arrows and the lines, and it was a Fibonacci code. But at the same token, all he had to do was give me the intent. And I think that's where the planning came into play. As long as we can plan it at our level and articulate it to the higher levels, I think the brigade commander and the battalion commander and the brigade four had complete trust in a young little Sergeant First Class to make it happen. But he's not giving himself much credit. Like at the end of the day, he did give myself and Captain Broxson, our SPO deputy, a opportunity to provide more input than he's allowing. Because it was a hybrid of multiple logistical trains that some people have never seen before. And we were able to have true commodity areas within that flea BSA minus, quote unquote. And it was all because he gave the intent. We understood what his intent was. And it, in my personal opinion, it worked flawlessly because, again, we closed the logistical locks like sometimes people struggle with, right? But we were able to catch the tail to the head of the snake. And sometimes that's very hard, you know? So that planning process is very fine tooth combed. Yes, he keeps it close to his heart, but at the same token, we know that it's close to his heart. So we play, like we sit there and we keep giving him little nuggets. Hey, sir, what about this? Oh, I didn't think about that. Hey, what about this? You know, so he doesn't know it, but we actually played a bigger part than what he's leading on to. He just doesn't know it.
Were these roles and responsibilities things you had discussed beforehand or formalized, or did we fall into it as we moved throughout the rotation?
It, from my standpoint, ma'am, it evolved into it. It evolved, right? Everything has to change, right? You can always have a set base plan or, you know, playbook. But within that playbook in sports, you have to evolve to your opponent. And just like battlefields, you have to constantly, we hate to say it, we love to say it, frag-o everything, right? But even though we had that base playbook, we were able to evolve it and change it and tailor it. That's the best. That was the beauty behind it. We were able to tailor it to the fight because each battalion had a different fight at the different moment. And, hey, what about this? I don't know. Well, what about this? Okay, let's look at that a little bit more. And that's what allowed him to make those educated, articulated conversations with, you know, Colonel Velez, the senior sustainer of the brigade, that he was able to make a decision and the brigade commander enforced it, you know? So all the intents were made. It's just how we were able to evolve it and grow with the battlefield, because the battle period is going to change more and more, maybe stronger, maybe lesser. We don't know. But that's how we, as a SPO section, were able to divvy up those responsibilities, because we were able to evolve with the fight.
You asked me a question in our AAR, if I thought the systems that we had in place were personality-based or really systems-based. I think we came into the fight with some systems that were very – they worked because we had the right personalities in the right in the right positions. We started fighting, we fought through our train up, starting at the individual training level through the collective training cycle, the way that we were going to operate out here. The takeaway and the advice that I would give everybody is it's okay to have that personality, those personality based systems. But the improve that I think we're going to take out of here is taking those systems and actually codifying it into an SOP. If it worked out well for us here, and that's great. But for anybody else, you know, if you can start that fight through the collective training cycle, get it codified in your SOP before you get here, when you leave the National Training Center and you have the leadership changeover, it's more likely to last longer than you or longer than in your NCOIC, because I'm going to switch out at some point. Sergeant Raymond's going to go and be a first sergeant, and there's going to be a new SPO and there's going to be a new NCOIC, and those people are going to have different personalities. And while it worked for us, that's the takeaway. We need to get those things codified in writing so that my successor and his successor have a baseline to work off of. There's always going to be the human aspect of it, but that's what I would say the improve is.
And that's how you build continuity. Continuity is the biggest thing that sometimes some units struggle with, because if you don't have continuity, you can't continue to, like I said, evolve it and grow on it. You have to have that continuity of a baseline. And I concur with, you know, what Major Hill said, that you have to have it codified in writing. Because then that gives the replacements, right? Not necessarily replacements, but the people that are going to take the helm, right? The opportunity to sit there and say, okay, this worked. We can see that this worked. There's some historical data that backs that up. But if you can't have that continuity, then what's going to happen? It's just going to fall by the wayside. And then it's going to be starting off from square one again with a new OIC, a new NCOIC, and it'll go on and go on and go on. I think my successor gave me continuity, you know, the one I replaced, and I turned to him, even though he's retired, you know, retired Master Sergeant, you know, Ubaldo, I turn to him even to this day. I say, hey, what should I do about this? And he'll sit there and say, listen, this is what you need to do. And that's where that comes from, is that's how you build that continuity, ma'am.
Okay. Based on what went well for you, is there anything that you would say is more on the system side that you think would work across OIC and COIC teams and is not quite as personality based?
I think the way that we divvied up how like how we managed the sustainment fight, having the NCOIC be really hands on with the coup ops fight, and allowing the OIC to manage the FUOPS and that outside integration, it allowed us to go in both directions simultaneous. There were a number of occasions that when the DSSB would show up to the BSA, having a SPO representative out there to help manage and make sure that we were receiving the CSSB and that the companies had the right personnel in place, that it's not the NCOIC's job to manage the company's commodities, but having somebody that could move to the point of friction at the same time that I'm reaching back to the SOC to say, hey, this is what we're going to need tomorrow. This is what we're going to need in the next 48. I think that's a system that I would say is critical. The other piece of it is, having the NCOIC being able to help the young lieutenants who were managing my LCOP, and being that, when they're looking at the log stats in the morning and helping them see the red flags.
It takes a person to understand logistics, right? There's different commodities within the SPO section, and I always say it to this day. The SPO section is filled with the brightest minds of every class of supply. But you have to have somebody who understands logistics as a whole, because it is time consuming where you have to see the red flags for what they are and be able to question those red flags. And I think by us being able to split and then come back around and close the loop on the information, I think that's was very beneficial on our part, because I'll be transparent. I don't know everything, I would tell you, but he knows more than I do. And that's where it was able to be that balance, is being able to sit there and say, hey, I don't know this. I know you do, but I don't. What do you think we should do? And there's a lot of, like, it's to me, it's more personality-based and systems-based, because at the end of the day, underneath this multicam uniform, there's still people that do know things and don't know things. And I think that's what makes the SPO section very, at least ours, very successful in this rotation and future endeavors, is we're able to take our systems and apply it with a personality. And it doesn't work like that, right, for every SPO section. But I think that is a way to build those systems, is through the personalities. So they feed each other. They wash each other's hands, ma'am.
I absolutely agree. I think that there are times that the SPO NCOIC is a position that sometimes people will choose to take some risk on with leaving it unfilled. And what you two have demonstrated through this rotation is the amount of benefit that comes from having an experienced non-commissioned officer in the SPO shop is immeasurable, that you just don't get the same amount of impact, even having very talented commodity managers or a talented deputy, as you have with a SPO OIC NCOIC team that is synchronized and is able to manage the fights that way.
I think the other factor that we haven't talked about, and this, is the non-commissioned officer corps exists to manage people manage and train soldiers. That's the other piece that the NCOIC of the SPO shop, having that experienced non-commissioned officer that has the ability to manage the day-to-day, manage those people in the different sections, and move people around as various. SASMO is a great.
That was a good example for this rotation. For this rotation, yeah.
We came out here without a SASMO tech. My SASMO is an E5 who's not even
a 25
he's
series.
He's not even a 25 series. He's medical.
He's a 68 golf. he's a, and now per the MTO, we're authorized 168 golf, right, to run for the
laptops. And yeah. Sergeant Smith deserves all the credit in the world.
Yeah.
Because he did a great job managing the SASMO. And he only had two E4s with him. So the entire SASMO section was an E5 and two E4s. We knew that that was going to be an area that needed some attention, just to manage, make sure that they weren't getting, that they were moving to the right points of friction. I never had to worry about that because the NCOIC was focusing on doing that, moving and, you know, managing those soldiers. And then also there's the non-SPO related things, that the SPO is part of the BSB staff, even though they kind of fall in that gray space between battalion and brigade. But they're a part of the HHC. And the HHC within the BSA has duties and responsibilities that they have to fulfill. But what's unique about the SPO section is we're fighting a brigade fight. We're not fighting a battalion fight. And so working with the company to make sure that the HHC company commander and that HHC first sergeant had the people at the places of friction that they needed to do the things that HHC needed to do, i.e. base defense, you know, things like that. That was all Sergeant Raymond. That was all the NCOIC interfacing with the first sergeant and then doing the personnel management of moving our people within our section to help fill those gaps and also advocate on our section's behalf of, hey, I got it. I don't have the people. Very, very few times did that get elevated to the OIC level, which allowed me as the OIC to focus on the brigade sustainment fight instead of managing the people. Without that NCO in the right NCO in the seat, the OIC ends up doing that.
It's a balance, you know. It's a balance. I've learned many years ago that, you know, there's lines that are not supposed to cross between officer and enlisted. You know, for everything from a PL to a platoon sergeant, all the way up, there's lines that should never be merged. And I did everything to get his six, to protect his six, so it never had to merge. And I tell him all, I used to tell him, if I can't handle it, we got problems, you know? But at the same token, like, I'm very blessed and highly favored to have the section that we had because I knew we were going in shortchanged. We were robbing Peter to pay Paul at some point. And I will tell you that It's just a chess game. You're waiting for the next move to go, ma'am. That's all it is.
Okay. Any final thoughts, both on your dynamic as the OIC, NCOIC, or on the rotation as a whole?
On the rotation as a whole, I think the framework we had. If I was gonna leave any unsolicited pieces of advice, the sustainment framework that the brigade comes up with needs to be flexible and adaptable to the operation. We had a framework where we pulled the FTCPs into the BSA, and we could sit here and have a log debate over the base cluster or the massive, you know, BSBville BSA style. I think either one there's benefits, but the point is those FTCPs were pulled in close enough to the BSA that it facilitated face to face interaction, which helped communication across. It allowed FSC commanders to come face to face for log syncs. It allowed us to go point to point more easily, even if comms were bad, and be able to help work through some of those gaps. There was one occasion where one of our battalions grossly they moved hard and fast down the washboard very quickly over the course of about 6 hours, outran their ground line of communication, And so that leads me to the second piece about framework. We had a general play of call it a 70-30 split between the FTCPs and the CTCPs with a plan to use the Alpha Company BSB to augment those FSCs on call, but that wasn't the main effort. Alpha Company was in the BSA to be able to receive from the DSB in the mornings, and then after the DSB, that daily DSB resupply, we could kick Alpha Company out to help augment those FSCs. When this one particular battalion outran their ground line of communication, we were able to basically reverse that for a 36-hour period and then have an alpha company do a log pack, if necessary, forward to their CTCP to fill up that FSC. That allowed the brigade to keep fighting. So whatever framework needs to be adaptable, getting too rigid in it, we'll kind of box in the sustainment community. And then the other piece that I would say is the log sinks. The log sinks made us money. And there are points in the fight where you're not going to be able to do it, because the BSA is moving. But having the pace plan to be able to go point to point with those FSCs to get the data that you need, so that you know what they're doing, and be able to help direct, the right sustainment in the right direction, that made us a lot of money. I think it helped us keep the FSCs off the road. It helped with our fighter management of the FSCs, on most days. I think there were a couple days where they were on the road a little bit longer, but those were some internal issues within the respective battalions. But for the most part, I think the framework that we came out here with, and then the last point that I would make on that framework piece, we fought gunnery, we fought our training cycle with that framework. We started to work through that. We built that relationship with the FSCs. As a former FSC commander, it's really easy to go rogue. It's really easy to have six battalion fights versus a brigade fight, and the sustainment that might work in most respects for the maneuver community, as long as you know what your adjacent battalion is doing, but it doesn't work for the sustainment community. The brigade sustainment fight is a brigade level fight, and establishing, having the battalion commander establish the relationship that he did with his peers, establishing that relationship and setting the tone with the FSCs that you are part of the brigade's effort. It's not just a battalion effort. And we did that early on, and we fought through our training cycle that way, so that when we got out here, it wasn't a surprise. There was already that relationship built. And I think that has to happen during the training cycle. If you don't practice that in the training cycle, and then you get out here to the National Training Center, you're going to be fighting a totally different way. And you're not going to be able to mirror it completely, in garrison, but you can mirror a lot, especially with BSA exercises. If the BSB goes to the field, the FSCs need to be included, in that FTX. We didn't get the entirety of the FTCPs in terms of, like, they didn't get 70% of their distro platoon into the BSA, but we had their C2 nodes. So we were able to start working through the systems of log syncs, reporting, and things like that.
I think, to continue on with the systems, right? I think the biggest misconception, and I recommend, is that log syncs are not a time for requests. It's a time for validations, right? So I think that's what I would offer to the rest of the sustainment community is, like, you need to start having log syncs. If you're going to have log syncs, they need to be valuable. They need to have validation. They don't need, like, oh, I'm requesting, or maybe this, right? No, there has to be validation, because that tells us in the positions that we're in that you understand your fight. So one recommendation is that, you know, make your log syncs valuable and achievable. A second is, don't be afraid of change. I think that's the biggest structural issue that many logisticians have is, like, oh, we did this back in the past, it's going to work again. Don't be afraid of change. Be afraid to be that one fish going upstream and say, hey, listen, let's try it this way and see what happens. But that's where it ties into what he was saying about, you know, prior, you know, during the steep training cycles, is that's that moment where you could sit there and say, okay, we didn't do this, let's try it this way. Okay, that didn't work, let's try it again. Let's try something else. So I would offer to the sustainment enterprise, you know, like, don't be afraid of change. Change is going to happen whether you like it or not. But at the end of the day, like, it's going to be effective. It's just what's tailored for your brigade and your brigade commander and his intent and your battalion commander and his or her intent, you know? So I would offer that the logisticians and the sustainers of that SPO section of whatever brigade combat team is out there, IBCT or SBCT or ABCT, be that voice that the point of friction is going to need. Don't hide in the shadows. And I think Major Hill did a phenomenal job of being like, hey, sir, I understand you see the big brigade fight, but here's what I see from my angle. And he or she may not know that. You know, that's about protecting that person's blind side. You have to look at all angles. And you, ma'am, being in the SPO, knows that the angles, the blind side angles are the ones that are going to get you. So I will that's my recommendation for follow-on, you know, units to come through.
Very insightful. Thank you again for sitting down with me today. And congratulations on a fabulous rotation. And good luck on your way back to Fort Bliss.
Thanks for having us.
Thanks, ma'am.
If you enjoyed today's podcast, please subscribe. If you have any questions or would like to contact us, you can reach us on Facebook at Gold Miner Team National Training Center or by email at ntcgoldminerpodcast@gmail.com.